People who cultivate the way look upon desire as something they must stay far away from. People who cultivate the way should stay away from desire. You should keep your distance from it. You should see it as if not seeing, hear as if not hearing. The eyes contemplate shapes and forms, but inside there is nothing. The ears hear the world's sounds, but the mind is not aware of them. When you reach that point, there is no need to practice keeping your distance. If you can be around sense objects all the time without any problem, then it is all right. But if you can't handle that, then you should practice keeping your distance. Section 31. When the mind is still, desire is dispelled. The Buddha said, "There was once someone who was plagued by ceaseless sexual desire and wished to castrate himself. The Buddha said to him, 'To cut off your sexual organ would not be as good as to cut off your mind. Your mind is like a supervisor. If the supervisor stops, his employees will also quit. If the deviant mind is not stopped, what good does it do to cut off the organ?'" The Buddha spoke a verse for him. "Desire is born from your intentions. Intentions are born from thoughts. When both aspects of the mind are still, there is neither form nor activity." The Buddha said, "This verse was spoken by the Buddha Kashyapa." The 31st section explains that when people want to stop desire, they should stop it within the mind. If you want to know the method for stopping the mind, you should realize that desire arises from the mind's intentions, and that your intentions are produced from your thoughts. Now take a look at your thoughts. Are they produced of themselves? Are they produced from something else? Are they produced from a combination of both? Or are they produced without any cause? You should also find out whether thoughts are internal, external, or in the middle, between the internal and the external. Do they come from the past, the present, or from the future? When you try to find thoughts in this way, your thoughts also become still and without any substance of their own. Once your thoughts are still, your intentions also become still. Since your intentions are still, your desires also become still. When your desires are still, you will see all forms and dharmas as images in a mirror. Like reflections in a mirror, they are not real. You will see that all activities are like bubbles. They are also false. All Buddhas successively contemplate and transmit these expedient dharma doors that enable one to subdue the mind. The Buddha said, "There was once someone who was plagued by ceaseless sexual desire and wished to castrate himself. This person couldn't stop his thoughts of lust even for a moment. Because his sexual desire was so strong and overwhelming, he tried to do something about it. He finally thought of a method. He decided to cut off his own male organ." The Buddha said to him, "To cut off your sexual organ would not be as good as to cut off your mind. Your mind is like a supervisor. If the supervisor stops, his employees will also quit. The Buddha said to him, "You say you want to cut off your male organ. It would be better to cut off your false thinking mind. Your mind is like a supervisor. If the supervisor stops, the people working under him will also stop. If the deviant mind is not stopped, what good does it do to cut off the organ? You get involved in an activity only because your mind has false thoughts. If your mind didn't have false thoughts in the first place, then it wouldn't get any help from others, and this kind of activity would stop. But if your deviant mind of lust is not stopped, then what use would it be to cut off your organ? That would be absolutely useless." The Buddha spoke a verse for him. "Desire is born from your intentions. Thoughts of desire arise from your mental intentions. Intentions are born from thoughts. What do intentions arise from? They come from thoughts. When both aspects of the mind are still, there is neither form nor activity. Your thoughts of desire are made quiet, and your thoughts that contain various kinds of deviant knowledge and views also cease. When these two kinds of thoughts both become still, then there isn't sexual behavior, nor are there any remaining thoughts of sexual desire." The Buddha said, "This verse was spoken by the Buddha Kashyapa. Kashyapa Buddha spoke this verse." Section 32. Emptying out the self quells fear. The Buddha said, "People worry because of love and desire. That worry then leads to fear. If you transcend love, what worries will there be? What will be left to fear?" The 32nd section explains why people worry and feel afraid. People feel worried and afraid simply because they have love and desire. If we can put an end to love and desire, then we will not have any worries or fears. From limitless aeons in the past up to the present, we have mistaken the four elements for the characteristic features of our body. We have mistaken the conditioned perceptions of the six defiling objects for the characteristics of our mind. As a result, we have become attached to the body and its senses. We crave its pleasures, and we don't want to let them go. Because of this, every kind of difficulty arises. Once difficulties arise, then many worries and afflictions arise, and we fall prey to anxiety and fear. You should contemplate the four elements. Know that the body is a combination of the four elements and that fundamentally there is no self. Next, contemplate the conditioned perceptions of the six defiling objects as empty and non-existent, and recognize that the mind is impermanent. Finally, if you can cut off thoughts of love and desire, then all your worries and fears will naturally disappear. The Buddha said, "People worry because of love and desire. That worry then leads to fear. Because you chase after love and desire, you have things to worry about. You have worries and afflictions. From those worries and afflictions, fear develops. But if you transcend love, if you can cut off and turn around thoughts of love and desire, what worries will there be? What will be left to fear? What will you have left to worry about? What is there to be afraid of? Nothing at all. The reason people have worry and fear is because they have attachments and cannot put things down. Section 33. Wisdom and clarity defeat the demons. The Buddha said, "People who cultivate the way are like a soldier who goes into battle alone against 10,000 enemies. He dons his armor and goes out the gate. He may prove to be a coward. He may get halfway to the battlefield and retreat. He may be killed in combat. Or he may return victorious." Shramanas who study the way must make their minds resolute and be vigorous, courageous, and valiant. Not fearing what lies ahead, they should defeat the hordes of demons and obtain the fruition of the way. This 33rd section uses an analogy to show that people who cultivate the way should follow the three non-outflow studies of precepts, samadhi, and wisdom, and should study the way with single-minded vigor. Consider the example of a person who has various kinds of pretensions, bad habits, and delusions. Delusions in views, delusions in thoughts, and delusions like dust and sand, which have accumulated since time without beginning. If you can single-mindedly study the way, you are like a single person. If you have many pretensions, many delusions, and many bad habits, those things are like 10,000 enemies. If you can receive and uphold and cultivate the pure precepts, that is equivalent to donning your armor. If you strengthen your resolve, then you won't be cowardly. That's the decisive vigor that comes from your precept power. If you can advance with courageous vigor, not turning back halfway, that is a kind of samadhi power. If you have samadhi power, you won't quit halfway through. Furthermore, if you don't fear any situation, no matter how many enemies are up ahead waiting to attack you, then you won't be killed so easily when you go into battle. That is a kind of wisdom power. By uniting the threefold powers of precepts, samadhi, and wisdom, you can defeat your beginningless habits, your pretensions, and all your other faults. All these myriads of problems are analogous to the hordes of demons. If you can defeat the hordes of demons, you will be able to obtain the fruition of the way. If you obtain the fruition of the way, that means you will return from the battle in triumph. The Buddha said, "People who cultivate the way are like a soldier who goes into battle alone against 10,000 enemies." If you can concentrate your mind to cultivate, you are like a soldier. Countering your bad habits, faults, pretensions, greed, anger, and stupidity is just like going to war against a host of 10,000 enemies. He dons his armor and goes out the gate, just like someone preparing to go to war. He may prove to be a coward. Perhaps your resolve is not solid and you act like a frightened coward. He may get halfway to the battlefield and retreat. Perhaps you cultivate for a while and then stop cultivating. You stop halfway through and retreat. He may be killed in combat. Maybe when you fight against your illusory bad habits and against the demon armies, they defeat you. You fail in your cultivation and die in battle. Or he may return victorious. Perhaps you return in triumph. Shamanas who study the way must make their minds resolute and be vigorous, courageous, and valiant. Shamanas who cultivate the way should make their minds firm and resolved. Don't turn back halfway. Go forward with vigorous courage. Only advance, never retreat. Not fearing what lies ahead, they should defeat the hordes of demons and obtain the fruition of the way. Don't be afraid of how many enemies lie ahead. Defeat the demons, and then quite naturally you will be able to attain the fruition of the way. Section 34. By staying in the middle, one attains the way. One evening, a shramana was reciting the sutra of the teaching bequeathed by the Buddha Kashyapa. The sound of his voice was mournful as he reflected remorsefully on his wish to retreat in cultivation. The Buddha asked him, "In the past, when you were a householder, what did you do?" He replied, "I was fond of playing the lute." The Buddha said, "What happened when the strings were slack?" He replied, "They didn't sound." "What happened when they were too tight?" He replied, "The sounds were cut short." "What happened when they were tuned just right between slack and tight?" He replied, "The sounds carried." The Buddha said, "It is the same with a shramana who studies the way. If his mind is harmonious, he can attain the way. If he is impetuous about the way, his impetuousness will tire out his body. And if his body is tired, his mind will become afflicted. If his mind becomes afflicted, then he will retreat from his practice. If he retreats from his practice, his offenses will certainly increase. You need only be pure, peaceful, and happy, and you will not lose the way." The 34th section explains how people should study the way. We should regulate the body and the mind in a wholesome way. We should not be too tense or stressed in body and mind, nor should we be too lazy. This same truth is also discussed in Confucianism. If you advance too rapidly, you will also retreat rapidly. When you cultivate the way, you shouldn't forget about the way, but you also shouldn't try to force the way along. Neither too fast nor too slow. This is a good method for our cultivation. If you don't keep to a moderate pace, then you won't be able to accomplish the way. If you don't know how to cultivate, then you will either be too hasty or too slow. If it's too tight, it will snap. If it's too slack, it will sag. If it's neither too tight nor too slack, then it will work out right. If you're too tense, you're like a taut lute string that will snap. And if you're too lax, you are like a lute string that will go slack and sag. By being neither too tense nor lax, you will succeed. One evening, a shramana was reciting the Sutra of the Teaching bequeathed by the Buddha Kashyapa, which is a text passed down from the time of Kashyapa Buddha. As he recited the text, the sound of his voice was mournful as he reflected remorsefully on his wish to retreat in cultivation. His voice was sorrowful and he sounded distressed. He felt very ashamed and remorseful because he didn't want to cultivate any more. He wanted to retreat. The Buddha asked him, "In the past, when you were a householder, what did you do?" He said, "What was your occupation when you were a householder? What kind of things did you do?" He replied, "I was fond of playing the lute." The shramana said to the Buddha, "I liked to strum the lute. Making music was what I liked most." The Buddha said, "What happened when the strings were slack?" "Oh, you know how to play the lute?" the Buddha said. "If the strings were slack, what happened to the lute strings?" He replied, "They didn't sound." "If the strings are slack, then no sound comes forth, and the lute can't be played. There's no music." "What happened when they were too tight?" the Buddha asked the shramana. He replied, "The sounds were cut short." The shramana said, "When I strummed, the lute strings would snap, and there would be no sound." "What happened when they were tuned just right between slack and tight?" "When the strings were neither too slack nor too taut, when they were just right, what was that like?" the Buddha asked. He replied, "The sounds carried." The shramana said to the Buddha, "All the sounds carried very far, and the music was very pleasant to listen to." The Buddha said, "It is the same with a shramana who studies the way. If his mind is harmonious, he can attain the way." If a shramana, one who diligently cultivates precepts, samadhi, and wisdom, and puts to rest greed, hatred, and stupidity, wants to learn the way, he must also be like this. If your mind is neither too tense nor too lax, then you can attain the way. Don't be in a rush, and don't be lazy. Then you can attain the way. If he is impetuous about the way, his impetuousness will tire out his body, and if his body is tired, his mind will become afflicted. If you are hasty and impatient in your cultivation, your anxiety and temper will wear out your body. If your body gets tired out, your mind will certainly become afflicted. If his mind becomes afflicted, then he will retreat from his practice. As soon as you have these afflictions, you will want to retreat. You want to go back to lay life and give up cultivating. If he retreats from his practice, his offenses will certainly increase. If you retreat from your practice and are no longer vigorous, your offenses will certainly increase in number and severity. You need only be pure, peaceful, and happy, and you will not lose the way. Simply make your mind pure, make your mind peaceful and happy, and you will certainly attain the way. Section 35. When one is purified of defilements, the brilliance remains. The Buddha said, "People smelt metal by burning the dross out of it in order to make high-quality implements. It is the same with people who study the way. First, they must get rid of the defilements in their minds, then their practice becomes pure." In this section, the Buddha said, "People smelt metal by burning the dross out of it in order to make high-quality implements. In forging metal, the dross is expelled before the metal is wrought into tools and implements. That way the tools are of extremely fine quality. If the dross is not first expelled, you can't make a good quality tool. It is the same with people who study the way. First, they must get rid of the defilements in their minds. People who cultivate and learn the way must get rid of the defilements in their minds. Once you remove the impurities from your mind, you will have a pure mind. If you cannot remove the impurities from your mind, a pure mind will not manifest. It's just like the dross in metal. If you don't first get rid of it, you can't make a good quality tool. If you get rid of the dross, then the metal can be made into good quality tools. All people can accomplish the way. Everyone is potentially a vessel that can hold the way. But if you don't get rid of your mental defilements, you can't hold the way. You can't accomplish the way. If you want to attain the fruition of the way, you must first get rid of your defilements. Defilements here refer to the desires in your mind, most especially the thoughts of sexual desire. If you don't get rid of sexual desire, then the filth and defilements will remain. If you can get rid of your sexual desire, there won't be any filth. Then their practice becomes pure. Without defilements, your practice, your method of cultivation, will become pure. But if your mental defilements are not eradicated, you will not attain purity in your cultivation. Although sexual desire is the greatest defilement, there are others. Greed, hatred, stupidity, pride, and doubt are all defilements in your mind. You should get rid of them, and then you will have a response in your cultivation of the way. You will be able to return to the source, go back to the origin, and regain your inherent pure mind. Section 36, the sequence that leads to success. The Buddha said, "It is difficult for one to leave the evil destinies and become a human being. Even if one does become a human being, it is still difficult to become a man rather than a woman. Even if one does become a man, it is still difficult to have the six sense organs complete and perfect. Even if the six sense organs are complete and perfect, it is still difficult for one to be born in a central country. Even if one is born in a central country, it is still difficult to be born at a time when there is a Buddha in the world. Even if one is born at a time when there is a Buddha in the world, it is still difficult to encounter the way. Even if one does encounter the way, it is still difficult to bring forth faith. Even if one brings forth faith, it is still difficult to resolve one's mind on Bodhi. Even if one does resolve one's mind on Bodhi, it is still difficult to be beyond cultivation and attainment." The 36th section discusses the difficulties of obtaining a human body, being born in a central country, meeting a good and wise advisor, encountering a Buddha in the world, and various other difficulties. The Buddha said, "It is difficult for one to leave the evil destinies and become a human being." The three evil destinies are the hells, the realm of hungry ghosts, and the realm of animals. It's very difficult to leave the three evil destinies and be reborn as a human being. When the Buddha was in the world, he once brought up a question for all the disciples to consider. The Buddha scooped up a handful of dirt and asked, "All of you tell me, is there more dirt in my hand or on the whole earth?" The Buddha's disciples all answered, "Of course the dirt in the Buddha's hand is less than the dirt on the whole earth." Was there any need to ask about something as obvious as that? The Buddha said, "Living beings who can leave the three evil destinies, the hells, the realm of the hungry ghosts, and the realm of animals, and become humans, are like the dirt in my hand. Those who remain in the three evil destinies and cannot obtain human bodies are like the dirt on the whole earth." This shows that for beings to leave behind the evil destinies and become human is not easy. Thus, it is said that becoming a human being is difficult. Even if one does become a human being, it is still difficult to become a man rather than a woman. It's difficult enough to become human. To become a man rather than a woman is even more difficult. Now we're discussing the point of view of someone who would like to be a man. You may want to become a man, but you can't do it. But it's also difficult to become a woman. Even if you'd like to be a woman, it would be very difficult to ensure it because you don't have any control over it. You haven't the authority to select the gender you become. You can't just be whatever you wish to be. So that is also not at all easy. Even if one does become a man, it is still difficult to have the six sense organs complete and perfect. Suppose you have become a man, or you have become a woman. Let's not talk just about becoming a man, because there are also people who would like to become women. Suppose you have obtained a human body, and you are of the gender you wish to be. So that's not a matter of difficulty. However, it's still not easy for a person to possess all six sense organs in perfect condition. The six sense organs are the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind. Some people, although they have become human, don't have any eyes, or they are born blind. Some people become human but are deaf, or their noses won't let air pass. So even though they have noses, it's the same as if they didn't. Or they can't taste or speak. Their tongues don't function. Sometimes the body itself is disabled. For instance, half the body may be paralyzed. Or the mind may be defective. You can't think and you don't understand anything. In these cases, the six sense organs are not in perfect condition. This is very common. It is difficult for a person to have all six sense organs perfect and complete. Even if the six sense organs are complete and perfect, it is still difficult for one to be born in a central country. Suppose that the six sense organs are complete and perfect, so the eyes look like eyes and the ears look like ears. It is not the case that the ears look like eyes, or the eyes like ears, or that the lips resemble eyes, or the eyes resemble lips, with everything mixed up. One is not grossly deformed, with his eyes, ears, nose, and mouth all growing together so that they cannot be distinguished from one another, as if they wanted to form a corporation. Wouldn't that be ugly? And yet there would be no way to do anything about it. Even after one has his six sense organs complete, it is difficult to be born in a central country or the central part of a country. People from the four border regions of China, for example, were known by their tribal names as the southern Man tribe, the northern Mo tribe, the eastern Yi tribe, and the western Di tribe. Those were distinctive areas of China, and the inhabitants of the border regions were disadvantaged. It's easy to be born on the frontiers, but not easy to be born in the central territory. Even if one is born in a central country, it is still difficult to be born at a time when there is a Buddha in the world. It is not easy at all to be born during the time a Buddha is living in the world. Even if one is born at a time when there is a Buddha in the world, it is difficult to encounter the way. It's difficult to be born when a Buddha is in the world, but even if you manage to do so, it is still difficult to encounter the way. Encountering the way refers to meeting a good and wise advisor. If you meet a good and wise advisor, a person who has the way and who cultivates the way, then you will also be able to cultivate the way. But to encounter such a person is difficult. Even if one does encounter the way, it is still difficult to bring forth faith. Even if you come to understand the Buddha Dharma, if you come to understand the methods of cultivating the way, it's still not easy to bring forth faith. You may encounter the way, but you fail to cultivate and bring forth faith. And if you don't believe in the way, although you have encountered it, it's the same as if you hadn't. Even if one brings forth faith, it is still difficult to resolve one's mind on bodhi. Suppose that you bring forth faith. It is still not easy to cultivate according to the Dharma. Having faith is one thing. There are many people who have faith in the Buddha Dharma, but when you tell them to cultivate, they don't do it. Not to mention anything else, merely ask them to quit smoking, and they can't bear to give it up. So they can't put it down. It's difficult to have faith, but to resolve your mind on bodhi, to aspire to the attainment of enlightenment, is even more difficult. You aren't able to cultivate according to the Dharma. Even if one resolves one's mind on bodhi, it is still difficult to be beyond cultivation and attainment. Suppose you have already resolved your mind on enlightenment. Making the bodhi resolve is hard to do, but you have already done so. It is still more difficult to reach the level where there is nothing to be cultivated and nothing to be attained, where you have done what had to be done and you undergo no further rebirth. At that point, you have already finished your cultivation. You have already attained enlightenment, and you need not cultivate any more. It is as when you have eaten your fill, you don't have to eat any more. When you have slept enough, you do not need to sleep any more. When you have cultivated the way, so that you are beyond cultivation and attainment, then you have reached the position beyond study and have achieved the fourth fruition of arhatship. That is how it is explained in Theravada terms. In Mahayana terms, the position beyond study is the position of Buddhahood. At that point, above, there is no further Buddha way to be sought. Below, there are no more living beings to be saved. This is the position beyond cultivation and attainment, and it is not easy to reach. As for cultivation, if you don't understand the Buddha Dharma, then it's a different issue. But if you do understand the Buddha Dharma, then you should quickly make an effort to cultivate. Section 37. The Buddha said, "My disciples may be several thousand miles away from me, but if they remember my moral precepts, they will certainly attain the fruition of the way. If those who are by my side do not follow my moral precepts, they may see me constantly, but in the end they will not attain the way." The 37th section says that if you believe in the Buddhist precepts, then no matter how far away you are from the Buddha, it is as if you were right next to him. But if you don't believe and hold the Buddhist precepts, then you may always be by the Buddha's side, but you won't see him and you won't hear the Dharma. This is what the 6th patriarch meant when he said, "If you believe in me, you may be 108,000 miles away from me, but it amounts to being right by my side. But if you don't believe in me, although you may be right by my side, it will be the same as if you were 108,000 miles away." That is also the meaning of this section of the sutra. The Buddha said, "My disciples may be several thousand miles away from me, but if they remember my moral precepts, they will certainly attain the fruition of the way." The Buddha said, "Even if my disciples are very distant from me, if they can constantly recollect my precepts and never forget them, and if they can rely on them and maintain them in their cultivation, such disciples will surely attain the fruition of the way. If those who are by my side do not follow my moral precepts, they may see me constantly, but in the end they will not attain the way. Someone who is on my left or right may always see me, but if he doesn't cultivate in accord with my precepts, then no matter how he tries, it won't be easy for him to attain the way." This section of text makes it clear that if you do what the teachings say, if you rely on the Buddha Dharma in your cultivation, then you are a true disciple of the Buddha. You will constantly be in the presence of the Buddha. You will always be studying under the Buddha. If you don't hold the precepts, however, you'll miss the opportunity that is right in front of you. Once there were two bhikshus in Varanasi who wanted to make a long journey to Shravasti to see the Buddha. As they walked, they grew more and more thirsty until they could barely walk any further. They were about to die of thirst. In front of them, they found a little water that had collected in a human skull. One of the bhikshus took up the skull, drank some of the water, and then turned to give some to the other bhikshu. The other bhikshu, seeing that the water was in a skull, and that, moreover, there were many bugs in it, didn't drink it. The first bhikshu said, "Why aren't you drinking the water? We are nearly dead of thirst." The other one answered, "Because the Buddha's precepts say that we can't drink water if there are bugs in it. Although I may die of thirst, I'm not going to drink water with bugs in it. I want to stick to the Buddha's precepts in my cultivation." The first bhikshu said, "Oh, you're really stupid. If you drink some of the water, you'll be able to go to see the Buddha. If you don't drink it, you'll die of thirst. Don't be so inflexible." Even after such a rebuke, the other bhikshu still wouldn't take a drink. The first bhikshu drank all of the water, and as he walked on, he felt very strong. But the second bhikshu, who hadn't drunk any water, died of thirst along the way. Because the second bhikshu had single-mindedly held the precepts, he was born in the Triastrimsha heaven and was endowed with the blessed appearance of a god. From there, he went to see the Buddha, and upon hearing the Buddha speak Dharma for him, he attained the pure Dharma eye and realized the fruition of arhatship. Meanwhile, the bhikshu who had drunk the water from the skull arrived at Shravasti after 3 more days of traveling. The bhikshu who had died of thirst saw the Buddha on the night of his death and then realized the fruition. 3 days later, the other bhikshu arrived and saw the Buddha. The Buddha asked him, "Where did you come from? How many people came with you? Was the trip uneventful?" The bhikshu told his story to the Buddha in detail. "We came from Varanasi, and the road was long. At one point on the way, we were without water. But eventually we found some water that had collected in a skull. I drank some, but my fellow cultivator wouldn't drink it when he saw that there were bugs in it, so he died of thirst. The fact is that he didn't have affinities with the Buddha, and so he died instead of seeing the Buddha. His attachments were too strong." After the Buddha heard the story, he told the bhikshu, who had died of thirst, to come forward. The Buddha said, "That very day he was reborn in the heavens and was endowed with the lifespan of a god, which is quite long. Then he came to my Dharma assembly, and I spoke Dharma for him. He has already realized the fruition of the way. You say that he was stupid, but in truth, you are the stupid one. You didn't keep the Buddha's precepts, and although you have come to see me, you might as well not have seen me, because your mind isn't true. You aren't sincere enough. You didn't hold the precepts." So from this episode, we can see that, whether or not you are beside the Buddha, what matters is holding to the Buddha's precepts as you cultivate. Then you actually get to see the Buddha. If you don't cultivate according to the precepts, although you may be at the Buddha's side, it's as if you never saw him in the first place. Section 38. Birth leads to death. The Buddha asked Ashramana, "How long is the human lifespan?" He replied, "A few days." The Buddha said, "You have not yet understood the way." He asked another Shramana, "How long is the human lifespan?" The reply was, "The space of a meal." The Buddha said, "You have not yet understood the way." He asked another Shramana, "How long is the human lifespan?" He replied, "The length of a single breath." The Buddha said, "Excellent. You have understood the way." The Buddha asked a Shramana, "How long is the human lifespan?" The Buddha asked this question deliberately. It wasn't that the Buddha didn't know the answer himself and had to ask the Shramana to find out. The Buddha asked because he knew that people don't know the length of a human lifespan. So he asked a Shramana, "How long is a human being's life? How much time does a human life last?" He replied, "A few days." The first Shramana said, "Probably after a few days we will die. Life is not very long." The Buddha said, "You have not yet understood the way. You still don't understand." He asked another Shramana, "How long is the human lifespan?" The reply was, "The space of a meal." The Shramana answered, "In the time it takes to eat a single meal, a person's life is over, the Buddha said, you have not yet understood the way. He too didn't understand. He asked another shamana, how long is the human lifespan? He replied, the length of a single breath. The lifespan of a human being lasts for one breath. The Buddha said, excellent. You have understood the way. The shamana who gave this answer understood the way. In India, there was once a king who believed in adherents of non-Buddhist religions that cultivated many kinds of ascetic practices. Some followed the precepts of cows and some the precepts of dogs. Some smeared ashes on their bodies and some slept on beds of nails. They cultivated all sorts of ascetic practices, such as those undertaken by yogis. Meanwhile, the bhikshus who cultivated the Buddha Dharma had it comparatively easy because they didn't cultivate those kinds of ascetic practices. Now the king of that country said to the Buddhist disciples, I believe that although these non-Buddhists cultivate all kinds of ascetic practices, they still cannot stop their thoughts of sexual desire. How much less are you bhikshus who are so casual able to stop your afflictions and your thoughts of sexual desire? You surely cannot put a stop to them. One of the Dharma masters answered the king this way. Take a man from jail who has been sentenced to execution and say to him, take this bowl of oil and carry it in your hands as you walk down the street. If you spill a single drop of oil, I'll have you executed. If you don't spill a drop, I'll release you when you return. Then send some beautiful women musicians out on the street to sing and play their instruments when the sentenced man is walking with his bowl of oil. If he should spill any oil, of course you'll execute him. If he comes back without spilling a single drop, ask him what he's seen on the road and see what he says. The king did just that. He took a man who was sentenced to be executed and said to him, today you should be executed, but I'm going to give you an opportunity to save your life. I'll give you a bowl of oil to carry in your hands as you take a walk on the street. If you can carry it without spilling a single drop, when you return, you won't be killed. But if you spill a single drop, I'll execute you on schedule. Go try it out. The sentenced man did as he was told. He went out on the street with the oil, and when he returned, he hadn't spilled one drop. Then the king asked him, what did you see on the street? The sentenced man said, I didn't see a single thing. All I did was watch the oil to keep it from spilling. I didn't see or hear anything else at all. The king asked the Dharma master, well, what is the principle involved here? The monk answered, the shramana who has left the home life is in the same situation. He sees the problem of birth and death as too important, so he has no time for thoughts of sexual desire. Like the sentenced man, the shramana wants to end birth and death. If the sentenced man were to spill one drop of oil or to become the least bit afflicted, he would die. The shramana who has left the home life is also like this. Why is he able to end his sexual desire? It's because he sees the matter of birth and death as very important. Why can't the non-Buddhists end their sexual desire? They don't understand birth and death. They don't realize how important this matter is. Thus, they cannot end their sexual desire. Why don't people who cultivate put a stop to their sexual desire? They haven't truly recognized the immediacy of the impermanence of birth and death. If you realize the immediacy of impermanence, you won't have time to give rise to false thoughts of lust. You won't have time for the affliction of sexual desire. Section 39. The Buddha's instructions are not biased. The Buddha said, students of the Buddha's way should believe in and accord with everything that the Buddha teaches. When you eat honey, it is sweet on the surface and sweet in the center. It is the same with my sutras.